Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. My favorite scientist is Dr. Walt Brown. He wrote the best-selling book, In the Beginning, on creation, evolution, and the global flood. Walt received a PhD from MIT. He's taught science at the U.S. Air Force Academy. And for years, I have read creationist literature on the Grand Canyon. And I've been unhappy with it. Because after going to the canyon 10 times and rafting in the canyon and trying to understand how it formed, I was unhappy with the creationist literature because I felt it didn't really describe it. Well, I've just recently read the latest chapter of In the Beginning, which is available on Dr. Walt Brown's website, creationscience.com. And Walt, I have to tell you, I was thrilled with that chapter. Because for the first time in some 30 years of reading, I felt, wow, I understand how the Grand Canyon formed.
Yes, Bob, and I think you also now understand many other strange things that are found in the northern Arizona, southern Utah region, and parts of Colorado.
Right,
and
in the vicinity.
Mexico.
Yeah, things in the vicinity that were never associated with the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, for example, petrified wood.
Mm-hmm.
Petrified national forest. Biggest example of petrified wood concentrated is directly connected to the formation of the Grand Canyon.
Well, why don't we start with an overview of two lakes, two huge inland lakes that existed after Noah's flood.
Right, right.
Could you describe those lakes to us?
Yeah. Let's put our minds back in gear, and we'll quickly go over things. It'll raise some questions, but let's skip them, or we'll be here for...
Right.
Whole week. The floodwaters are covering the entire earth. That was a global flood. Even the smaller mountains of the pre-flood earth were covered. And now the floodwaters are starting to retreat. Now, don't ask where to go.
Right.
It's a very easy answer, but yeah. It takes 10 minutes to explain.
Right.
So the water's draining off the earth. The crust of the earth is thickening and crushing and rising up out of the water. And there's basins in that crust that's rising up out of the water. And every basin is going to be filled with water.
Yeah, there are lakes today, like the Great Lakes and Salt Lake.
Minnesota has 10,000 lakes. Well, there would be 10 million lakes on the Earth's surface. So huge lakes. And as the mountains are pushed up, such as the Rockies, which you're very familiar with, Bob, you are concentrating a lot of mass on a small base. And so those mountains have to sink in. It's just a simple grade school physics problem. Hmm. There's an unbalanced force there. It's got to sink into the mantle. And what's going to give? Well, on either side of that sinking Rocky Mountains, the pressure's building up because stuff is being shoved down. And so there's going to come weak spots on the flanks of these mountain ranges that are sinking in that are going to break loose and rise in compensation for the downward sinking of the Rocky Mountains. Hmm. Those rising regions are called plateaus.
Right.
Plateaus are always found next to major mountain ranges. Hmm. The Cascades mountain range up in northwestern United States, right next to it is the Columbia Plateau. The Rocky Mountains are
the Colorado
right next to
Plateau.
The Colorado Plateau.
Huge.
The largest mountain range on the earth by far are the Himalayas.
Mm-hmm.
What's next to them? Largest plateau in the world, the Himalayan Plateau.
Mm-hmm.
So
Nepal and that area?
Sure, sure. The 10 largest mountain peaks in the world are in the Himalayas.
Mm.
So Colorado Plateau is rising. And on this rising plateau, an area, by the way, is about the size of Germany, on that rising plateau are two huge lakes. One of them called Grand Lake. I discovered it in about 1987.
Let me just say, without adding detail, that other creationists have since used your name for it, Grand Lake, and identified the same lake, but you did first discover it, and that's pretty exciting.
They don't want to mention that.
No, but okay.
Okay.
But I did.
That's okay. Another lake that another geologist has found is called Hopi Lake, a little smaller. Grand Lake was about the size of Lake Michigan, size in volume and area, Lake Michigan. So here are these two huge lakes that are being lifted over a mile in the air on the Colorado Plateau. Mm. Now, what would happen if those lakes gain more water than they lose? They're going to lose water because they're at high elevation and a lot of evaporation going on, but they're going to gain water due to rainfall, and there'd be a lot of rainfall back in that period right after the flood because the moist air coming from the warm Pacific going across the Rockies is going to drop its moisture on the western flanks of the Rockies. So you're going to get a lot of rainfall and drainage. And Grand Lake got to a point where it started to spill over its boundary. And Grand Lake was very near a cliff system that was about 2,000 feet high. I call it the Echo Vermilion Cliff System. You can go see it today.
Mm-hmm.
And once it spills over that cliff system, once it starts to spill over, it's going to erode a notch on the bank of Grand Lake that may be an inch or two deep. But the lake is big, so the level of the lake will not drop much, but the notch being eroded a few inches is going to let more water spill over it faster, and it's going to cut down much, much faster than the lake's level. And so you're going to get a catastrophic dumping of that lake. It's called breaching.
Hmm.
So this water, roughly the equivalent of Lake Michigan, is spilling out through this deep notch over northern Arizona. It will undercut, when you see where Hopi Lake was, it will undercut the northwestern corner of Hopi Lake, spilling its water out as well.
And so the two lakes spilled out their water and carved out the Grand Canyon.
Right.
But could we back up a step?
Okay.
My first trip to the Grand Canyon, driving there, of course, we were in awe. But after that first trip, every subsequent trip, my family had to hear me with the same comments as we're driving through Navajo Reservation and from Colorado down to the Grand Canyon, year after year, saying, the Grand Canyon ain't nothing. The Grand Canyon isn't nothing. Because look, as we're driving for hours, we see far to the north, this massive cliff range, far to the south, an identical range of cliffs, and everything in the middle, it appears to be thousands of square miles of sediment is just gone. It's all gone. It's not here anymore. What happened to it all? The Grand Canyon is just one piece of it.
Right. And you're probably talking about mesas, buttes, and spires, and cliff systems.
Mm-hmm.
The mesas, buttes, and spires, the most famous region in the world where you see those, is called Monument Valley. If you've ever gone to a cowboy movie, you've probably seen a lot of scenery from the Mesa, Butte, and Spire region of Monument Valley.
Oh, yeah. We stayed in Monument Valley last summer with our kids.
Right. And by the way, that region was in Grand Lake. And there's a reason why Mesas, Buttes, and Spires are concentrated in the basin of Grand Lake. You see, as the lake empties, and it would take about 3 weeks for it to empty, almost all of it to empty, beneath Grand Lake today is 1,400 feet of sandstone. So after the flood, that sand was water-saturated sand. It would have held roughly 20% of its volume probably would have been water because the sand grains are roughly round in shape, and there's lots of space in between the adjacent grains to hold that water. So once the lake dumps, gets expelled, what's going to happen to the water below the floor of Grand Lake?
Well, if there's any place for it to run to, it's going to seep out of the groundwater.
It's going to come up, because before the lake emptied, there was this water pressing down on it. Now the lake water's gone, so that water's got to come up.
Right, I see.
It's still under high pressure and under there.
I see.
So as the water is coming up, and it'll come up fairly easily because the sand grains have a lot of pore space in between them.
Right.
So it's coming up and carrying with it. It's coming up through the easiest routes up, which would be the lowest portions of the lakes. The highest portions of the lakes, which would be islands and mounds in the basin of the lake, they're going to resist that upward flow because there's more material intervening.
Hmm.
So the lower portions of the lakes are going to get the most water coming up vertically through them, and they're going to carry with it a lot of this sand and debris out. And so the deepest portions of the lake are going to be excavated more, and the highest portions, the islands, are not going to be excavated at all.
So you're describing how the buttes and spires form.
That's right. What an island is going to become, the slopes of that island down to the bottom of the lake are going to get steeper and steeper because the water is coming up vertically, steepening the sides of those islands, and they become buttes and mesas and spires.
So now, could we go to where the water pours out of Grand Lake, and it forms basically a canyon system, first Marble Canyon, which is very different from the Grand Canyon, and then the Grand Canyon.
Yeah. As Grand Lake is spilling to the south, it is eroding, taking with it an awful lot of dirt with it. These are called Mesozoic sediment. And removing that causes the land underneath to rise a little bit, just like if you had a spring scale.
Right.
Or let's put bricks on a mattress. And you lift up some of the bricks in the center of the mattress is going to bulge up a little bit.
Right, and it forms like a funnel shape. As Grand Lake was breached, that water rushing out, it widened sort of like a funnel. And so that whole area of the funnel heading toward the Grand Canyon, all the surface material eroded away rapidly.
That's right. And if you pull out a map of the state of Arizona and look for Page, Arizona, you'll see that about 20 miles to the southwest is that funnel region. And you can easily spot it on a map because Highway 89A has to go in a hairpin curve to negotiate that funnel. And it's very prominent.
The ground underneath where all that was eroded away started to lift up, and then Marble Canyon formed in a way very different from the Grand Canyon. It literally cracked.
That's right. As it's rising because of the lifting off, eroding away of the overlying softer rock. It's softer in that it's crumbly and it's weakly cemented. The layer underneath it, which is called Kaibab limestone, very hard but very brittle, is arching up, and because it's brittle, it's cracking.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a photograph taken from an aircraft looking down at Marble Canyon at our website. When you look at it, you see it's obvious. Marble Canyon began with a crack.
It's a crack. It's a stress crack.
A tension crack, right.
A tension crack. And then you could see other cracks that would form just the way you'd imagine if that kind of pressure was, that upward pressure was put on that stone.
Yeah, so not only is the water spilling over this 2,000-foot high cliff, it's now going into that crack.
Mm.
And the crack is growing down to where Hopi Lake is 30 miles to the south. And that water is undercutting the northwestern corner of Hopi Lake, and now Hopi Lake is spilling out.
Mm.
Hopi Lake's a little higher. The waterfall that's coming out of there would be about 20 times higher than Niagara Falls is today.
Mm.
And the volume flow rate coming out of Hopi Lake would be, for a period of just a few days or weeks, about 1,000 times greater than the volume flow rate coming over Niagara Falls.
Right.
So that water is now excavating to the west.
Hmm.
And to make a long story short, carving the Grand Canyon, which is a little over 200 miles long.
Okay, so when I've gone to the Grand Canyon, I heard the story when I was a kid that the Colorado River carved out the Grand Canyon. And so I go there and I look at it, and I see not only is the canyon there, the general shape of the canyon, but there are all these side canyons, massive side canyons that are as deep as the Grand Canyon that go nowhere.
That's right. And they have no water to carve them.
They have, right. There's no rivers forming in those massive side canyons. And so the question I had until I've read your latest chapter on the Grand Canyon, which is at creationscience.com, until I read that chapter, I was frustrated because the creationists couldn't explain how the Grand Canyon formed. Now I understand that when these lakes, when they were breached and carved out this massive canyon, now the canyon was lower than the groundwater above it. And so the groundwater from after the flood began to rush out into that Grand Canyon. And that groundwater, which was massive flows, carved those side canyons.
That's right. The canyon, the main trunk of the canyon, was being cut far below the water table.
Right.
So it was releasing water on the flanks. So the Colorado River didn't carve the Grand Canyon. The Colorado River is a consequence of this wall of water from these two giant lakes.
Right.
that spilled out and eroded that area. And now, where does water flow today? It's got to flow through the deepest part. That's called the Colorado River.
We see the same thing up at Mount St. Helens today. The canyons that are there, Engineers Canyon and others, they were not formed from the river coming out of Spirit Lake, but they were formed rapidly within hours and days, and that river was formed by the canyon.
Right, right. Now, if the Colorado River formed the Grand Canyon, that's what's being taught in our schools, Bob.
Yes.
That's what's being taught if you go into the museum up the Grand Canyon.
It's bizarre.
If the Colorado River carved it, wouldn't you expect to find about 800 cubic miles of sediments, and that's what you got to remove to form the Grand Canyon, 800 cubic miles of sediments in a huge, huge river delta where the Colorado River enters the Gulf of California.
Yeah.
It ain't there, Bob.
It's not there. So the Grand Canyon sediments, where are they?
They're all over the flanks of the Colorado River, 1 to 200 miles east and west of the Colorado River as it flows from, say, Lake Mead down to the Gulf of California. And you can see it when you're driving east and west across the boundary between Arizona and California. Just slow down your car as you pass a stream bed or a creek bed that has cut down 100-200 feet and look at the rocks and the dirt that's in the walls of that excavated creek, and you will find slightly rounded rocks, some of them boulder size, and mixed with mud and clay. And that tells a big story. The fact that these large rocks were carried in a flow and rounded means the flow was quite violent and strong.
Right.
And the fact that there's this fine stuff mixed in with it means that the flow stopped very quickly and everything then settled out. So that's where it is. 800 cubic miles must be eroded to form the Grand Canyon. And to give you a feel for what 800 cubic miles is, if we take every river on the earth today and calculate the volume of water in every river on the earth combined, you'd only get 300 cubic miles.
Whoa.
Now, so 800 cubic miles is a lot, but it's nothing compared to what had to have been swept off. The Kaibab limestone that I mentioned, the
hard
top of the Grand Canyon, you had to sweep off at least 1,000 feet off of an area around the Grand Canyon that's about 10,000 square miles.
That's what I'm talking about when I said when we drive there, we look at all that strata that's just gone.
Yes.
As you're driving for hours before you get to the Grand Canyon, I point out to my kids, you could see strata in cliffs, yes, cliffs to the south of the highway and far to the north. We use binoculars, we look, and the strata match perfectly, so all that entire chunk of Arizona is gone.
In between the cliffs has to be removed.
Yes.
And it has to be swept out someplace. And you're not going to sweep it out with wind, because there are no sand dunes around there. It's not going to be swept out with glaciers. Glacier activity is very easy to identify, and there haven't been glaciers within 500 miles of the Grand Canyon. Water swept it out.
Yeah.
And it had to be violent. And it had to be fast, and it had to be a sheet of water.
Right. Now, the side canyons, when you explain the formation of the side canyons, that the Grand Canyon was carved out, and now the water in the water table had somewhere to go.
Right.
And so it flowed with tremendous force, tremendous amount of water in that sandstone. And it basically became a drainage ditch. It formed the side canyons.
Right.
Now, there are two other terms the audience, I don't think, may recognize. Slot canyons and barbed canyons.
Yep.
Could you describe those?
Slot canyons are very pretty. I think everybody's probably seen the beautiful photographs of them. These are canyons that are very narrow, but very deep. The width of the canyon is small compared to the depth.
Right.
And there will be lots of cracks in this material after the flood waters drain. There are going to be cracks there, and those cracks are going to be slowly expanded by water seeping out. The cracks will be roughly vertical, and so you're going to get slot canyons forming as water drains out. Barbed canyons are much more interesting. Not as pretty, necessarily, but far, far more interesting. Tributaries to rivers enter the river at angles less than 90 degrees.
In other words, acute angles. If you have a river
right.
and a tributary enters it, well, basically they're both flowing downhill, so they're going to enter at an acute angle, a small angle.
Right, at small angles. But around Marble Canyon, these huge side canyons called barb canyons are entering at larger than 90-degree angles, called obtuse angles. And they look like barbed wire when you look at them from a map. In other words, they're sticking out from the main Marble Canyon, and Marble Canyon's leading into Grand Canyon, by the way, and they're sticking out, but they're backwards. The flow that cut them is going in roughly the opposite direction as the Colorado River is flowing today.
Right.
The direction of the flow of the barbed canyons is to the north, Colorado River's to the south. How can that be?
Yeah, how can that be? That is so fascinating.
And geologists don't like to talk about it much. Because the only explanation I've ever seen them put forth to it is absolutely ridiculous.
Yes.
And they should be embarrassed.
Right.
You see, as the Grand Canyon is being swept, those 800 cubic miles are being removed from it. And far more, about 2,000 cubic miles that had to be removed first before the Grand Canyon's carved.
Right.
The sheet of water that was sweeping over. That's going to cause the land below the Grand Canyon to rise. Just for the same reason we took bricks off the mattress.
Mm-hmm.
So the mattress is going to rise underneath them. So as the region under the Grand Canyon is rising, it's tipping the layers to the north about a degree, 1 degree, and that's causing subsurface water to drain out to the north. And where is a lot of that water going to drain into? It's going to drain into the crack that formed Marble Canyon.
Mm.
And so as those drainage paths, subsurface drainage paths, are spilling out Marble Canyon, they're carrying material with it, and you're forming a valley
right.
due to all the material underneath that's being removed.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard of sinkholes. That's where water drains from a spot, forms a depression, a little dimple on the surface of the earth. Well, these are long valleys that are lots of dimples.
And if someone in the audience is having a hard time picturing this, you could read it. You could see the photographs, the maps at creationscience.com in the chapter on the Grand Canyon. You link to it right from the homepage.
www.creationscience, that's one word, creationscience.com.
Okay.
I'll take you there, and the table of contents is on the left-hand side of the page. And
mm-hmm.
Go down and find the origin of the Grand Canyon, click on it.
We're almost out of time. Last thing, the Petrified Forest, that ties into the formation of the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, because Petrified National Forest is right in the basin of Gopi Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of other smaller petrified forests are in the basin of Grand Lake. Why would petrified wood, why would it be in lake basins? Well, those lakes that are left over from the flood are rich in silica. I'll have to skip over why, but they're rich in silica. They're warm. Water that came out from under deep under the earth is warm. Logs floating in that lake, and there'd be lots of pre-flood forests that have been ripped up and are still floating on the surface of these floodwaters and now floating on the surface of the lake. Those logs are going to be saturated with this silica-rich water. As the water cools off, the silica in solution must come out of solution.
Mm.
It'll precipitate out. Where will it precipitate to? It'll precipitate into the pore spaces in the cells, forming petrified wood.
So that there are a number of features, actually, around the Grand Canyon that were never before associated with it. They just form such a beautiful picture once you understand how the Grand Canyon was formed. Dr. Walt Brown, thank you again for a fascinating show. And if you would, we'd like to do a final program tomorrow.
Okay, I'll be here.
All right, thank you so very much. You could read Dr. Brown's book, In the Beginning, Compelling Evidence for Creation and the Flood, at his website. It's all there for free, creationscience.com. It's fascinating. For years, we've been selling his book right here at Bob and Yurt Live. You could get it on our website, kgov.com. Just click on the store under literature. You could read all about the book, see the book there. It's just great. Or you could call us at 800-836-9278. That's 1-800-8-NYART. 1-800-836-9278. If you order this week, we will send you an autographed copy of Walt Brown's book. And boy, is it great. It is the best creation book I've ever read. And I've been a creationist since 1973. So that's 33 years of reading creation evolution books and books on the global flood. And it is absolutely thrilling. Plus, God has used it to bring many people to the Lord, especially people interested in science. So not only can you get this book in the beginning from us, but at Bob and Yurt Live, we offer a science pack. It's the BEL Science Pack, 5 fabulous resources, including a debate on the age of the earth, the fabulous video Unlocking the Mysteries of Life, and Dr. Walt Brown's In the Beginning, My Bible Study on Genesis Creation. We think you'll love that. And another fascinating video called Privileged Planet. We think you'll love the BEL Science Pack. It's expensive. It's $99.99, but it is just absolutely awesome. And we offer everything here at Bob and Yurt Live for a money-back guarantee. And if you're not a believer, we'll send you for free our DVD, Mount Moriah, The Evidence for the Resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's for free if you write to us at Bob and Yurt, P.O. Box 583, Arvada, Colorado, 80001. That's Bob and Yurt Live, P.O. Box 583, Arvada, Colorado, 80001. Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada, what a fabulous school. May God bless you all. It's January and a new year. We can help you make some great New Year's resolutions. I'd like to grow more this year in my knowledge of Scripture. I'd like to be more well prepared to talk to others about eternity. I'd like to become more mature as a believer. Would it please you to achieve these goals this year? If so, please consider letting us help you. At Bob and Yurt Live, we've assembled really great teaching resources for you to grow in your Bible knowledge and to grow as a Christian and to develop personally. I'd like to recommend a subscription to one of our monthly resources. If you subscribe during this month of January, as a gift right away, we'll send you an extra month's fulfillment. If you subscribe to our monthly Bible study albums, we'll send you 2 albums for the first month to get you on your way. If you subscribe to our monthly sermons, we'll send you 2 months worth of sermons. If you subscribe to our monthly videos, we'll send you an extra DVD. Either call us or subscribe online. You can call us at 800-8-NYARD. That's 800-836-9278. 836-9278. Or go online to kgov.com. That's kgov.com. Just click on the store and then subscriptions. You can be more prepared to influence others for good, including your own family, coworkers, and friends. If you let us help you achieve these goals, you will also be helping us to stay on the air and to continue to reach more people. So again, to subscribe to our study albums, sermons, or BEL videos, please go to our store at kgov.com or call us at 800-836-9278.